Because you can say it so many different ways. You can fuck a duck.
Welcome to Geeks Without God with Tim Wick, Nick Glover, and Molly Glover.
We're geeks, we're geeks, we're geeks without God. We're geeks, we're geeks without God. We don't recognize moral authority. We don't accept divine superiority. We're geeks, geeks without God.
Hello, my name is Elder Tim, and for this week's podcast, we watch Book of Mormon. Pat Wick was also with us, so she's on the podcast too.
We're geeks, we're geeks, we're geeks without God. We're geeks, we're geeks, we're geeks without God. We're geeks, geeks without God.
Welcome to Geeks Without God. I'm your host, Tim Wick, joined as always by my co-host, Nick Glover.
Hiya.
And Molly Glover.
That's me.
And we are joined this week by my fabulous wife, Pat Wick.
That'd be me.
Yay, yes. Pat.
Although I am curious where the unfabulous wife is. I'm just dead.
Shh, we don't talk about her.
Oh, she's dead. Yeah. Long dead.
Long dead.
You ever notice that patch in your backyard that's especially fertile?
Ooh. I hit her behind the Christmas tree in the bathroom. Yeah. I'm not kidding. There's a Christmas tree in our bathroom. Anyway,
Her name is Susan.
It's in the shower, which is the best part because it looks like it's in the shower either waiting to kill me or it's like, excuse you, I'm showering.
So we are here to talk not about the Christmas tree in our shower.
Really?
But about Book of Mormon.
We all
went to see Book of Mormon this last weekend. A couple of weekends ago. And Pat and I went. It was kind of an anniversary.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Happy anniversary.
Yeah.
Happy
anniversary thing. 26 years?
26 years.
Wow.
And so we wanted to talk about the show.
Yeah.
The show,
yeah.
Book of Mormon, which Tony winner for Best Musical. And
My name is Elder Price. I've had it in my head for
2011.
By Matt Stone, one of the guys from South Park.
Matt Stone and Trey Parker, and I'm trying to remember the third name, but the guy who co-wrote it. Also wrote Avenue Q.
Mm. Right, yeah.
Like, probably did more of the music and lyrics, I'm guessing, maybe. Well, South Park guys write a lot of lyrics.
Matt Stone's first movie was Cannibal the Musical.
Yeah, and there's a lot of music in South Park, too. I mean, they write a lot of lyrics. I will say...
They're Oscar-nominated songwriters.
I'd heard...
And so Tony winning songwriters.
Nick had the soundtrack, and so we're not actually in the car together a ton. Mm-hmm. But we had listened to it a few times. Yeah. I'd heard the first few songs a few times. And so I knew those. And I really liked... It was really fun. This has happened to me a couple of times. I listened and knew Phantom by heart before I saw it. Same with Miss Saigon. Because I'd listened to the soundtrack over and over and over. And I knew all the songs, but I'd never seen it staged. So seeing something staged when you know the song is really cool. Because it's just... All these things that you kind of were imagining, but you didn't really know what was happening.
With Rent, the first time I saw, or the only time I saw Rent, was the day or two beforehand. A friend of mine was like, "All right, we're gonna sit down and listen to this once, and then before we go see it, just trust me on this. Like, we're gonna be doing Student Rush. We don't know where we're gonna sit or what our seats are gonna be like. So you wanna be able to know what they're saying or hear it, and even if you remember none of the songs." The words will be more clear if you've heard them once.
It's true.
That's true.
I think it's a great idea for anything Broadway musical.
It's true because, you know, the theater that we were in, we were seated, we were underneath the balcony. You guys were on the balcony. Mm-hmm. And the sound was a little muted.
Interesting.
Where we were seated.
The sound was loud for us.
I can't even tell. I know they say better be on the balcony than under it for sound. Mm-hmm. I can't. The balcony in the Orpheum goes up to like, everything but the first five rows.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. The balcony in the Orpheum is huge.
Yeah.
We were second to last row, far house right.
In the way back then?
Yes.
So, yeah.
Double letters.
We had no problem hearing the music at all. And it was very nice and loud, which is good.
Oh, yeah,
sometimes,
it was loud.
Sometimes Broadway shows the orchestra's loud and the mics aren't as loud and you get lost. And everyone had really good, strong voices. The only thing I didn't like about the show was I didn't like Elder Cunningham, the sidekick-ish kind of I thought that he was doing a Cartman impression half the time or like, I don't know, like a Jonah Hill impression. It felt very forced. It felt like forced comedy.
I having not seen it before, I just kind of assume that's the way that character is to be played.
And I don't know. I have no idea.
Well, the one we listened to from the original Broadway cast, he's a little less screechy.
Yeah, this one was just, I don't know. Maybe I liked his physicality. I like that a lot. But I, like I'm saying, I mean, when I say great. The thing I didn't like, that's a very like low bar. I mean, like I liked everything. So nitpick. If I had to pick, yeah, it's a nitpick. If I had to pick something I didn't like, that's what I would go with. He was the only thing that were sometimes I was like, oh, it's grating. Because It was like, he would do his voice like this and and it's like, okay, just that's cool. Like, I get what you're doing, but it felt like it was too extreme on both ends of things. But
so, before we get too much into the play and the themes in the play, which interested me a lot, I just wanted to talk a little bit about pre-show. A couple of things that there was something that happened to Pat and I, and then something we noticed in the program book. I don't know if you guys noticed the same thing. But what happened to us is we're walking into the theater, and I do not know why this happened. We were seated second to last row, right on the end.
Yeah.
So, you know, basically
you're sitting right by an usher.
We walk up and we show the usher our tickets, and she's like, "You're right there," and we're like,
"That'll be cool."
Foot from the usher at this point, right? And she leans over us as we're getting into our seats.
As I sit down, all of a sudden her head is almost like a Beeblebrock's head, like second head, right there over my shoulder, and she's like, "Just so you know, this is one of the raunchiest plays I've ever seen. You got to be prepared. You should be prepared to see a really raunchy play." I'm like,
"Oh, sweet summer child."
Yeah. Well, beyond that, I'm like, "I doubt it." I looked right at her and said, "I doubt it." Yeah. Because I'm just thinking of beyond the stuff that the people at this table do that's raunchy, I've still seen a lot of other things. Like, I don't know, Hair, Pippin.
Yeah.
There are so many things that are really raunchy. Avenue Q.
Movies. Like, movies in
HBO.
And she's like, and there's one scene in particular that's really over the top. And that was actually kind of distracting for us because we spent the rest of the show leaning over to each other going,
Do you think this
is the scene?
Is this it?
I bet it was the dick fucking scene with the gigantic phalluses
where they were doing it.
Because they were doing like every position, oral and anal and
dagger dancing.
And that's my guess. But
daggering, as they say.
But we couldn't, I mean, that is distracting though. We assumed that was the moment.
It's like if someone says, "Oh man, there's this part in this movie that's so scary, you're going to flip your shit." And then like you're just waiting.
The whole movie going,
like,
was that
is that it? That's pretty scary. Yeah.
Well, there's also before the intermission, there was the scene where he has the hell dream.
Yeah.
Which
spooky
also
had hell dream.
That's after the intermission.
Oh, it is?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
But that was first. So I'm like, maybe that's it. Because there's a couple scenes in there in that thing.
The scene in Rent that's right before the intermission is usually the one where most people would walk out. That's the where there's lots of like humping and.
Love Abraham.
Yeah.
So there's that, and I don't know what made her, because I didn't hear her saying that to anybody else. So I don't know what made
her. You guys look like normals.
Check out these squares coming to see a musical. Yeah. What a bunch of rubes.
For whatever reason, she was really worried that we were going to think the show was pretty raunchy.
Were you wearing your crosses?
What?
I mean, did you have your reverence collar on?
No.
Was Pat wearing an Amish bonnet of some sort?
No, but she did decide to go with the burqa that night.
That might have done it. So
full hijab. I have no idea. We dressed normally.
Yeah. The other thing I thought was interesting, and I don't know how closely you guys looked in the program book, but there were three advertisements for the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints.
I did not see that. Yeah.
And, there was like, "You've seen the play, now read the book."
So apparently when the touring cast, the first season the show was performed, when they went to Utah and performed in Salt Lake City.
Wow.
The church bought out a show for Mormons, for their people.
Did they not know?
No, they knew.
What?
There's like, say what you will about Mormons, you can make generalizations about them being like fairly smiley, affable, like, people.
Yeah.
And, like, they just took it in stride and, like, laughed at themselves.
It does have a good, honestly, though, this is, again, another thing I wasn't super huge on. It has a strong, positive Mormon message. at the end of the play, they have propagated more Mormons. They did their mission. More Mormons are going door to door to spread the word of the Book of Mormon.
New Mormons.
No, Book of Cunninghams.
But but still though, it's basically the book. I mean, it's very, so that was the only thing where I was like, the happy ending to this play is that the Mormons win.
Well, I didn't interpret it that way, and that's where I wanted to talk about it.
Because
number one of the characters ends the play at best an agnostic.
Yeah.
He states very clearly.
Yeah.
He has
true.
He has doubts about the existence of God, period.
He also said fuck, so he can't be Mormon anymore.
He can't be Mormon anymore.
And he drank so much coffee.
He drank a lot of coffee. And to me, because no, it's not anti-Mormon, but I felt like it was kind of anti-religion. Because when we got to the end of the play, what they're doing through the whole thing is they're like, this is what Mormons believe.
Yeah.
They're not saying, isn't it fucked up? Because they don't feel like they have to.
Right.
Right.
They feel like they're saying,
collab.
Here you go.
Yeah.
Here you go. This is what they believe.
Yeah.
Just, we're going to put it out there and you can do with that information what you like.
Make your own opinion. Right.
But at the end, it's this perversion of Mormonism that they're selling.
That's true. That's true.
And it's basically saying they've just taken something that's ridiculous. They've made it more ridiculous.
But
and
really,
it
that
still
much
works.
More, I mean,
I did like the way that I can't remember the words again. The fuck you, God.
Hasadiga Ibowai
was used as a true and angry curse by the main love interest woman, the daughter of the president of the village or whatever. I don't know. I can't
president
remember.
President village?
Whatever they called her name. Neutrogena. I don't think they ever said her name more than once because they just kept using what they thought were hilarious series of N-words, which that was a played out joke for me. I did not. It was that.
Molly hates it when people say things like toxic hell instead of Taco Bell.
I don't know. It was a joke.
It was
funny a couple times, but then it gets to the point where it's like, you know, that's not her name. Like, there's no way you think her name is fucking Necromancer. Come on, dude. It would have been funnier if he'd called her Neutrogena the whole time instead of like another N word that makes everyone go, oh, that's another N word. I don't know. When she was singing her like sad, when she felt she was betrayed and she was like, you know, the everything is dark and gone, and she did the actual like Hasadiga Ibowai, like she spit it out like truly angry, and it wasn't just funny.
But that follows up, and I love this followed up with everybody going, hey, do you really think Salt Lake City is real? It's all a metaphor.
That was good. Yeah.
So to me it seemed like the kind of like part A, part B message of the show is religion is a series of lies that we tell ourselves for like a greater good and to accomplish positive things. In a very like general sense.
I can see
like yes, it's silly and nonsense, but like if people do good because of it and people's lives end up better, then like are these lies really harmful?
Yeah.
Kind of a like I think it
a gay character that's suppressing his homosexuality.
Yeah, I was gonna say if you pit Mormonism and the subjugation of women and gays like they have against female genital mutilation, sure it looks a lot better.
Right.
all the Mormon women still have their clits, so I guess that's all right.
For all
even
the good
though
it
they are serving men and God
are
subservient and
for sure. I don't agree with I feel like that was a message of the
for sure.
And also, one thing I thought was interesting, although it was pretty subdued, was the we're here to help you in this war-torn village.
Yeah.
Trying to hide from the butt-fucking...
General butt-fucking
general
naked.
General butt-fucking naked and his evilness.
Yeah.
And they're like, yes, great. We're here to hear your story. That's fantastic. We'll join you and take us back to Salt Lake City and make us and happier there because it sucks here.
Yeah.
And they're like, oh, yeah, we don't actually want to do that second part. We just want you to save your soul.
Yeah.
But you still get to stay here in
but
this war-torn village.
Yeah. It has a really interesting message about imperialism.
Yes.
You know, when all these white guys are doing their I Am Africa.
That was the point when the sour faced bitch in front of us who was having no fun at the fair turned and looked at me because I was losing it. I am Africa, and like all these white men like they are Africans, but we are Africa. Yeah. Like I was losing my fucking shit.
Africans are Africans, but yeah. We are Africa.
The whole I believe that in 1978 God changed his mind about black people or whatever. I was crying laughter at that point because that's true.
It's true.
Oh, they're terrible. Oh, suddenly in 1978, God was like, actually,
Do you guys know why that happened?
No, what specifically happened?
What specifically happened is that there was a black man who was rising in the church and was due to become a bishop, but according to Mormon doctrine, he could not become a bishop because black men could not become bishops in the Mormon church. However, one of the things that they believe very strongly is that God speaks to the head of the Mormon church, and that means that if the head of the Mormon church says anything, it came from God.
Mm-hmm.
When he says it, it's done. It's not like the Pope where a bunch of cardinals are like, oh, what he really meant was.
It's doctrine.
So this black guy who's risen up to this point in the church sues the church for discrimination, and he's going to win.
It didn't happen in the United States, though, because that would have gotten thrown out. It was in the Caribbean, I think? I'm looking it up on Wikipedia. Yeah. Interesting. Anyway, because it has to be right if it's in Wikipedia.
He sues the church, and they are aware that he's going to win. And right about the time that lawsuit is going to get settled, that he's going to win, an edict comes down from the guy who's the head of the Mormon church that says, God just told me black people are okay.
That's pretty convenient.
Yes.
It's nice that God suddenly remembered.
You know what that was? God was saving them from a lawsuit. He bailed them out.
God bailed them out. So that is true.
Yeah.
And it was specifically because there was a lawsuit.
Gosh.
And it's like someday the Mormons are going to come out with an edict from God that being homosexual is totally okay.
Oh, yeah. It'll happen.
It's already okay to be gay, just not to act gay. Yeah, you just can't act on your thoughts.
You can have gay thoughts as long as you admit to them and atone for them in a way.
And don't act on them. Turn them off.
Like a light switch. Turn them off.
So don't
think about it.
I was during the intermission, for whatever reason, I was looking up something about the play online, and I found this review, which is a terrible review. I should find it and link it in the show notes. Because it basically, the guy said, well, I haven't seen the show. but I listened to all the music, and so I can honestly say, you know, should Mormons be offended by the show? No, everybody should be offended by this show. And specifically, he complains about the jokes about pedophilia, which, you know, pedophilia is pretty offensive. But they're not suggesting.
I gotta fuck a baby to get rid of my AIDS?
Yeah.
It's not a joke. They do that.
Yeah.
Like, there's no joke there.
It has been done.
It's been done. Like,
there are people who believe it. Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So funny.
It's not implied that it's a good thing.
Nor is it implied that it's a joke.
Yeah. And then also saying, you know, it's not very funny that these people are coming into Africa and there's this imperialism, and it's like, are you dumb?
Yeah.
Do you not understand?
Well, so he hasn't seen the show. So if he had, he would know that's what they're saying.
They wrote an entire song.
Yeah.
Basically saying, look at what these white guys are doing in Africa.
Who reviews, other than me writing a paper, which, by the way, got an A in college, who reviews a show they haven't seen? You know, like...
If it's your job?
The internet.
Yeah.
No, the internet.
Yeah. Especially if it's your job.
It was a newspaper.
Yeah.
Oh,
this
Jesus.
Was a newspaper.
I mean, I wrote a review of the Irish Step Dance show based on the commercials, Riverdance, because I had to write a paper about something. I didn't have money to go see a show. So I got an A because I described all sorts of things that I just assumed were happening. But I mean, I didn't get paid for that, nor was that review shared.
Fortunately, it was a great for fiction. So
yeah.
Exactly.
Do you want to talk about the plot of the movie at all?
The show?
The show, I mean, to people aren't familiar with the
Maybe we should, you know, here as we're getting almost to five question time.
Real quick. All right, I can do this real quick. All right, so there's the main Mormon, Elder Price. And they have just graduated School of Mormon. And they are going out to do their missionary work. And he is paired up with Elder Cunningham, who is the misfit, who is kind of a wackadoo. And
he's a wackadoo.
No
nerd.
One really wants to be with him, but there he is.
And he's fat.
And he's fat, so that's why he's funny. And everyone's getting sent to Germany and Japan and France. And, oh, it's so great, all these beautiful, wonderful first world countries, and they get sent to Uganda, and he's very upset because he wanted to go to Orlando. That was his dream world. That's where he always thought he would go.
Orlando.
It seems like an odd place to go for a mission.
But that's anyway. Where he wants to go. He went there as a kid, and it seemed like a magical, wonderful place, and so he's always dreamt of going back, and, you know, his parents always told him that whatever you ask Heavenly Father for, you'll get, which is something that I've known some Mormons, that is something they're told. If you pray for it, you'll get it. Like that the world is ours. We just have to pray. And so
it might take a while.
When it doesn't happen, he feels like maybe he starts to have some doubts in Heavenly Father. And so then they go to Uganda, and it's awful, of course, because it's, you know, Uganda, and it's
warlord
general village.
General
mutilation. There's a general who calls himself General Butt Fucking Naked, who is literally just murdering villages nearby. He says he's gonna come to their town, cut the clits off all their women, and if not, he'll just kill everybody, and he kills a dude.
Yep.
As a warrant, just kills him straight in front of everybody.
Yep.
And that's when Elder Price is like, fuck this, fuck Uganda, fuck Africa, I'm out, like I'm leaving, runs away. Elder Cunningham steps up, takes over, he's known for lying, that's his big vice.
Yeah. So he starts, creative embellishment.
Yeah. And he's never read the book.
And he's never read the Book of Mormon.
But somehow graduated.
And so he just starts making up what's in the Book of Mormon because he wants to keep them interested. He wants to try to, they need to get baptisms. If they don't get baptisms,
they gotta meet their quota, Glenn Ross style.
Yeah. They gotta always be closing.
They need enough steak knives. Yeah. They want those steak knives.
And the Mormon
coffee's
president's
not for closers.
Yeah, the Mormon president's gonna come, and so they wanna make sure they have a good showing. So Elder Cunningham starts lying in order to get them, saying things like, oh, there's a part in here about not fucking babies to get rid of your AIDS. You should do frogs instead. And, oh, there's a part in here about don't cut the clits off women. It's very important to not do that. And they start listening, and they want to believe, and they all get baptized. And he falls in love with the daughter of the chief of the village. And then Elder Price comes back, and they decide to band together and defeat the warlord through the power of Mormon and song and togetherness and standing up-ness,
there's some tapping.
They stand up to the guy, and there's tapping. There's a contingency of other Mormons who have already been in Uganda.
Unsuccessfully,
who are all very colorful, funny characters, and then
colorful in personality, not in actually genotype.
No, they're all very white.
Oh, no, they're
super white.
Yeah, and then they save the day, and they decide to stay, even though they get shut down by the Mormons.
They're kicked out of the Mormon church,
brass is like, you guys are pulled, everyone go home, like, you're not doing this, like, what you've done is terrible here with the lies and the craziness, and we can't handle it, and they're like, nope, we're gonna stay instead, make it better, save the village, and they do, and then at the end, all of the African villagers are now new Mormons wearing shirts and ties and going and ringing doorbells and reprising the opening song, Hello.
Except they're not Mormons. I mean, they're Mormons, but they've
taken the Book of Cunningham, as
it's now book four. There's a line in there.
Did you know there was a fourth book to the Bible?
Like how Lutherans splintered off from the church or whatever.
Yeah.
This new church has splintered off from the
and they're saying
the
things
saints.
Like, you know, instead of like, hello, you know, like, my name is Elder Price. Now it's like, hello, like, you have a lovely mud hut. And like, and like talking about things. And that's the end.
But there is an Elder Butt Fucking Naked.
Yep, I'm Elder, but yep, General Butt Fucking Naked takes the cloth, as it were, I guess. Yeah. And everyone does. And everyone's happy. And Heavenly Father has shone down on everyone. And the village is saved. And I'm sure some other warlord is cutting clits off left and right, but, you know, we don't need to worry about that. We saved these eight
village,
people.
This village is in.
Yeah.
So that's the plot. It's great. It's good. I really liked it.
Pat has a fact to share with us.
Oh, yes. Robert Lopez is the name of their...
The third writer.
Mm. And I must say, according to Wikipedia, which is generally pretty accurate, he is the youngest of only 12 people who have won an EGOT, which is the Emmy, Grammy, Oscar, and Tony.
I will say, in Wikipedia's defense, it's way more accurate than most people give it credit for because of the rabid Wikipedians who sit and they just spend their whole day... Yeah. There are people who just—I mean—you can't make false edits anymore. It doesn't last.
Yeah. What was your favorite part, Tim? Was your favorite song or dance or favorite song?
I think it's for my own personal reasons. Probably my favorite song was Shut It Off because it had a tap number.
That was amazing. When they changed costumes in the room. Yeah.
And they're clapping. They're clapping the lights on and they're clapping the lights off. And when they clap the lights off, they're still dancing.
Yeah, you can't see them at all. And they're staying perfect formation.
And then they clap the lights back on and they've done a costume change while tapping.
So I don't know how they did that. I mean, I would love to have seen... I wish I could see...
You wish you could see the scene with the lights on.
Night vision goggles.
I need to bring night vision goggles next time. Be like, they each have a guy who comes out and dresses them. You know?
I enjoyed that number. I enjoyed a lot of the numbers, but that was probably my favorite.
Pat?
The number that sticks in my head the longest is actually the, hello, my name is Elder Price. Because it's just...
Hello.
And the little ding dong. It's really ding dong, catchy. Ding dong.
Yeah, it is. It's super cute.
And... the only other thing that I would mention or say is this, because people who may not know, all boys, when they're done basically with Mormon high school at the age of, 19? They are considered elders in their church.
Yep.
And they must, I mean, it is a must, required 2 years service going out and spreading the word.
Going on a mission that you don't get to choose where you go generally. You get assigned and you get assigned a partner.
Yeah.
And you have to be with, and they mention that in the play, but it's the whole, hey, look, all these pimply-faced teenagers are now elders, and they outrank every other woman in the play.
And J.W. said the same thing.
Jehovah's Witnesses.
A nine-year-old boy has to tell us what to do today because all the men have gone.
I knew about that from Matt Stone and Trey Parker's previous work, the film Orgasmo.
Yes. Which, if you have not seen Orgasmo, guys, that's an amazing movie.
The Mormon porn star action hero.
Oh, my God. It's so good.
Yeah. Do you have a favorite?
Spooky Mormon Hell Dream.
That was so great.
Absolute favorite. Because I've known a couple Mormons, and that is a real phenomenon, the Hell Dream. The dream of, my ex's best friend growing up married a Mormon girl, and she, when we talked to her a little bit, she was like, she was super afraid of going to hell. That was like her number one fear. And she would say, like,
as opposed to vampires, which is really normal.
People have nightmares about it. I just loved it. And I loved that when you woke up, everyone was like, oh, did you have the hell dream? But, like, the devils were all, like, super, like they were on the can of like, deviled ham. They were really cartoony. And his biggest fears were just devils with pitchforks and nothing really significant. It was great.
That was my favorite part, too, I think, because... when he's in hell and it's all fiery and burny, and then four old school Looney Tunes style dudes in skeleton suits, like skeleton dance out and start dancing around him and taunting him with giant donuts from when he stole a donut when he was a child.
Yeah.
And they start like dancing around him and like taunting him with a donut.
It's like
the least offensive, like even Mormon hell, they're not like fucking skinning you alive or something like that. No, it's just spooky cartoon skeletons like taunting you.
And it totally looked like some, like he probably saw a spooky Looney Tunes cartoon as a kid. And saw the skeletons and the devils. Like, I can almost picture that black and white, like, Looney Tunes thing. Where he's like, that just got in his head now.
And then Satan shreds in that song, too.
Four real people. There's Hitler and Genghis Khan.
Genghis Khan.
Jeffrey Dahmer and Johnny Cochran.
Cochran. And he's in hell because he got off OJ.
That's why he's scary too. Hitler's like, I exterminated the Jews, and it's like, I killed all the Mongols, and then like,
dominated China.
China is like, I killed and ate people. It's like, I got OJ off.
At one point, Jeffrey Dahmer says, I fucked people and ate them, whatever. Yeah. At one point, Jeffrey Dahmer, like, grabs Elder Price. And, like, bends him over and starts, like, thrusting him from behind while rodeoing. And
it's super funny.
It's like, what is a Mormon afraid of? It's just the most unrealistic, funny thing.
Yeah, it was really great. But,
Hitler's costume was ridiculous.
I agree with Pat. I've had the hello... bits of that of that song in my head since we watched it, so
it is it's really memorable. There are parts of it that are not as memorable musically, which surprises me a little because usually the three people that wrote it produce really memorable music. It's like mm-hmm. Avenue Q. I totally... I will
baptize her.
That was good, too.
Down to the river yeah. and I will baptize her.
It was so sexual. Yeah. Like, it was great.
I
will baptize me.
I liked, I really liked that I could tell, I've just seen enough musicals, but I could tell when the intermission was next because everyone came on stage and started yeah. dancing and singing big, together. Big and I was like, and I kept looking over at Nick and I was like, this is it. This is the river. Yeah. And he was just like, what? And I was like, because I wanted to be like, your legs are almost going to be okay. They're going to stand up in this tiny chair.
I had a great time.
Yeah, me too. Me too.
I enjoyed it. I was glad Nick said, "Hey Tim, yeah. Book of Mormon is coming. You get tickets on this."
Rent is coming back, and I really think I want to go. Oof. I haven't seen it for 20 years, man. Last I don't know.
Year's Rent.
Oh, it's well, so good.
Everybody's got AIDS.
Hey, you know what we'll do is we'll look at the
AIDS.
We'll look at the Broadway Across America season 4 2016-2017 and like pick a musical next year.
Yeah, that was good.
Something Broadway. We're all
musical geeks. I like that.
Okay, so we gotta do 5 questions. But you know, I'm gonna say we're kind of late to the party, but Book of Mormon's been out for 5 years. This is the first time I've seen it. But hey, listeners, comes to town, I think, you know, the religious themes are really interesting. And I liked the fact that at the end of the play, Elder Price is clearly not convinced
he
about God.
He specifically says, I'm not even sure if God's up there, but whatever.
Yeah.
Let's just focus on
him. I'm not even sure there is a Heavenly Father or something like that.
And he very clearly is like, I've been spending all this time ignoring all the fucked up shit in this book.
Yep, yep.
It's not clearly anti or pro religion in general or even specifically. It just, I don't know.
It is not overtly anti-Mormon, but I would argue that I think, and probably it's because, you know, I know enough about Parker and Stone and their other work. I think it is subversively anti-religion, and what it's saying is that this stuff's ridiculous, and at the end of the play, they're doing something else that's equally ridiculous.
Only they've added Boba Fett and the Starship Enterprise.
What they're saying, what I saw them saying was, all this shit's made up.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
Comforting lies.
Yeah.
Comforting lies. It's a metaphor. I mean, and the villagers are even basically saying, yeah, he made it all up.
Yeah.
But it's okay because it helped.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I'm with you.
So, okay. 5 questions. Pat, you have been on our podcast multiple times, but you haven't been on our podcast since we added our new 5 questions.
I know.
So we don't have to do anything weird like have you ask us 5 questions or come up
with... Not this time.
We've got 5 questions just set.
Yeah. Boom. Ready.
Woo. So, Nick, question number 1.
What is a movie you'll stop and watch anytime it's on?
I have a thing for coming-of-age movies. Currently, it's Easy A.
I love that movie.
Good. I got a pucket, got a pucket full of sunshine. I got a pucket, got a pucket full of sunshine.
I got a pucket.
It's such a good movie. Oh, I love that movie.
Yeah.
That's like one of the only DVDs I own, and I'll just pop it in the... Like, we have a lot of Blu-rays, but it's like, I when I had an Xbox 360, it was one of the only DVDs I had, and I would put... That was one of the only things that could play on the Xbox 360, because it didn't have a Blu-ray player. So I would watch that a lot upstairs when I was doing laundry.
It's remarkably well written and acted, and there's a lot of people who are like, really? It's like, they've even not heard of it, and you're like, well, it's a modern update of the Scarlet Letter, and most people are like, really? Yeah, really. No. Really?
No, really.
Yeah, really.
It took the Scarlet Letter, and it made it not awful. It's actually really good.
It's got Emma Stone.
Yeah, she's awesome.
It was kind of like, she's like Lindsay Lohan if she didn't just go completely off the rails.
She's like Lindsay Lohan if she was funny. Like, she's funny as hell.
Lindsay Lohan was funny in Mean Girls.
Yeah, but she was more the straight...
Emma Stone, the girl born to play Mary Jane Watson, who instead played Gwen Stacy.
Yes, I know, right? She actually has naturally blonde hair.
I know. So. Yeah. Sorry, Emma.
All right, question number 2.
Number 2.
What is your geekiest or most prized possession?
Those are 2 separate things.
That's fair.
That's why I said or.
I know. I'm going to actually answer both, because my most prized possession, and I'm going to be totally sweet on my husband right now, I have my 10-year anniversary band, which is a bunch of diamonds on there.
Ooh.
That is for sticking with this guy for 10 years. That's my 10-year band.
That's
and that
really
is
fancy.
My most prized possession. My geekiest possession, however, is a first edition signed by both Terry Pratchett and Neil Gaiman. Good
omens. Oh.
Hardcover first edition. And wait, hang on, wait. This is great because, so did they do the A signature, B signature joke?
One of them
writes, don't tell Terry, but burn this book. And then Terry Pratchett writes something different about Neil in the book.
It has been so long since I've looked at it.
Yeah, yeah. I had a roommate that worked at Dreamhaven, and I'd fill in there every once in a while for when they'd have signings, because they needed help. And so I met Neil Gaiman a few times there for signings, and people would bring him copies of Good Omens, and every single time he'd sign a copy of Good Omens, and they'd be like, I don't get it. And he'd be like, you have to have Terry Pratchett sign it for the rest. I have no idea what Terry Pratchett writes. I've only seen what Neil Gaiman writes.
I have to go up and look now.
That's awesome.
That's awesome. It's been a while. So, all right. Question number three is, what is supernatural being or mythical being do you wish was real?
I would say the dragons from How to Train Your Dragon.
Oh, that's a good one.
Yeah,
they're neat. They're nice. They're fun creatures. They're very sweet.
They're personable sky kittens.
Yes, they are. They're trainable.
That's the title.
Yeah.
Well. It was funny. We watched that movie the first time, and we were talking about it a couple of weeks later. And a friend of ours was like, "Toothless is just like my cat. It's just like my cat." And I was like, "That's because it's a cat.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's got everyone's cat eyes.
Yeah. Yeah. It's got a cat mouth.
The way its ears move to express its
It's a cat. Of course, it's like your cat.
We never saw the second one.
Was it? Actually, it is pretty good.
Yeah.
It doesn't have this, for me at least, it doesn't have the same rewatchability because it's far more serious.
Mm. It is. There's some seriously bad shit that happens.
Interesting. Yeah. Yes. Huh. There's some emotional crap that goes down.
Cool.
No, it's definitely worth watching.
Cool.
Yeah.
Unlike a lot of others that are not.
Question number four.
Yes.
Say religion is gone. What is the biggest problem that humanity now faces?
I think it is. I'm going to actually drill it down a little more for sexism.
Hmm.
Because, yes, it's tribalism, it's a lot of other things, but when you tell half the population of the planet that they are not worth as much as the other half, you are losing so much potential. And, working 5 hours every day just to get clean water back to your village and a lot of other things. And putting down people and not letting them do what they need to do or can do and bringing their different opinions and abilities to the table with everyone else. So, I mean, equality, but there's so much stuff out there. I do a lot of podcasts in my car, and a lot of them I do are science stuff and or sociology, and so many of them are talking about the power imbalances of the problems with women and around
the
world.
Women are a lot of problems. They are.
Yes, women are just compared to men, however.
Oh, well.
Good point.
It's how great can we really be, or how what's our potential if we're just kind of holding back half of humanity?
Yeah.
There was an anti-abortion sign that was up on my way home from work for, 6 months or something. And it was one of those that was like, had a picture of a baby, and it was like, I might be the next Abraham Lincoln.
Yeah.
Or the next Hitler.
And that's what I'm thinking. But at the same time, I'm also thinking, how about a picture of the pregnant mom who's going to be a single mom and is going to spend the rest of her life working to support this kid who might have been the next Marie Curie? It's there's potential that's lost. No matter what.
At least that one is a little bit better than the ones that are like, I had fingerprints before I was born. It's like, who gives a shit? Like, fingerprints doesn't make me suddenly want a baby.
You know who else had fingerprints? Hitler. Yeah.
So does every criminal in the FBI database.
My dog's got fingerprints.
Unless they burned them off.
Yeah, like in Seven. And
maybe the baby would burn off its fingerprints.
It might.
You know what? What if your baby came out and it didn't have fingerprints? Can you go to the Pro-Life of America and be like, I want my money back?
Citation needed.
You said this baby was smiling. This baby's an asshole. Question number five.
You said babies were a gift. Well, Merry Christmas.
Question five. What is your favorite quote?
My favorite quote. I looked up to get the exact quote here, and it's actually the famous one by Epicurus. Is God willing to prevent evil but not able? Then he's not omnipotent. If he's able but not willing, then he is malevolent. If he is both able and willing, then whence cometh evil? And if he's neither able nor willing, then why call him God?
That's a great, yeah. I love that quote.
It was one of the quotes I remember reading when I was in, like, an intro to... It was, like, one of those...
Philosophy
intro stuff, and I think I was in junior high, and it just clicked in me there is nothing out
that
there.
That was the same thing for me. I read that when I was in college, and I remember just being like, oh, no, that's... Yeah.
It's all
exactly,
logic.
That's exactly it. Yeah.
I didn't have the word for atheist or agnostic or any of that stuff, but as soon as I got rid of Santa Claus and the Easter Bunny and all that when I was around 7 or 8 years old, that I pretty much had lost all of it, but I didn't have the words or anything, and I got that, and I was like, yeah, I suppose it's the moment of the whole, yeah, I'm gay kind of thing. It's like, no, that's it. I get this.
Once you stop believing in magic, it's hard to believe in any magic.
Yeah. And it was all lumped together. It's like, and then it was like, well, no, that's magic in a story.
Yeah.
But this other crazy magic story.
Which relates back to Book of Mormon. Yeah, and the idea that here's all this ridiculous stuff that they believe. Yeah. They change it to a different bunch of ridiculous stuff. Yeah. And now it's a new religion. And it's like, can't you see? It's like build backwards. Yep. Mormonism grew out of Christianity.
Cunninghamism
grew out of Mormonism.
You sit there and you watch these people laughing at when they're telling the Mormon stories, the real ones, when they're showing them, and people are laughing so hard. And I just remember thinking, like, how many people in this audience are Christians who firmly believe in the divinity of Jesus Christ, our Lord?
Religious period,
but like specifically like believing in virgin birth and the resurrection and all that, but are laughing up their sleeves at this. And then Scientology, like, too, which is no crazier, really. I mean...
Yeah, you just sit there and go, you don't... Yeah. You sit there in your own compartmentalized world, and you can look at what other people believe and think that it's ridiculous, and yet you don't understand how somebody who doesn't live in that compartment looks at what you believe and sees that it's ridiculous as well.
Cognitive dissonance is a bitch.
All right, so... we want to say thank you, Pat, so much for joining
us.
Yay, thank you, Pat.
Before we go, we have a very important task to perform. We launched our Patreon site about a month and a half ago now. And one of the things that happens is if you support us at any level, we give you a shout out on the podcast. So this is the first time we're going to do this. We're going to thank everybody who supported us on Patreon up to this point. Hey, Nick. Why don't you read off the list?
All right. We'd like to give a thanks to Travis Peterson, James Mailing, Felicity Kozinitz, Don Espy, Ryan Gerber, Mick Drunkey, Sean Petre, Eric Knight, Kyle Decker, Abram Simons, Robert Hurd, and Joe Davis.
Thank you guys so much for being our first batch of subscribers.
So that's pretty cool. And we are, I think, going by the time this airs, we're going to add a new reward level. To try and record a new, like, in-studio version of our theme song. Because the original theme song, just so you know, was recorded in the programming green room at Convergence.
5 minutes before the show was our debut show.
Before our debut show. So we're going to try and up the quality just a little bit.
We're going to try to.
So, like, seriously, we're doing shit with this Patreon money.
Yeah,
we aren't just spending it on booze.
And we're looking at, like, maybe new button designs for subscribers in the future as an option, or maybe we'll have something in time for Convergence if you're going to come see us there.
Yeah.
So thanks again to all those supporters. We hope some other folks support us as well. But even if you don't, thanks for listening. We really appreciate it. And we will catch you at this time next week.
Bye.
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 You know, before we started, I probably should have warned you, this podcast is really raunchy.
We're geeks, we're geeks, we're geeks without God. We're geeks, we're geeks, we're geeks without God. We don't recognize moral authority. We don't accept divine superiority. We're geeks, geeks without God.
Until next time, you can find us blogging at geekswithoutgod.com. You can follow us on Twitter at geekswithoutgod, and you can even like us on Facebook.
We're geeks,
we're geeks, we're geeks without God.
We're geeks,
we're geeks, we're geeks without God.
We're geeks, Geeks Without God.
I was just like, no, so, I will not be helping them with that.